This podcast is protected by copyright and not for broadcast. See rsn.net.au for more details.
Here's Joe McKinnon.
Good morning, everyone. Lovely to have you company for Talking Horses. What a day of racing it was yesterday at Caulfield in front of a packed crowd in perfect sunny spring conditions. Caulfield Guineas Day 2019. Some top class racing we played witness to. And also in Sydney, we had a stellar day of racing on the track as well. On this morning's show, we're going to catch up with Scott Brunton, the leading Tasmanian trainer, who stole the show yesterday with his pony-sized galloper late in proceedings at Randwick. Also joining us, Henry Plumtree, with Cambridge Stud making a stallion announcement this week. Insider Insights with Seamus Mills, and we're going to talk welfare, the hot potato in racing at the moment. And also joining us, Lee Jordan from the VRC. They announced a wonderful initiative for the grooms this week ahead of Cup Week.
RSN 927's Talking Horses with Joe McKinnon.
There was no better place yesterday than to launch a project honouring leading owner, owner's advocate, bloodstock consultant and buyer Nick Collum than at Caulfield yesterday on Guineas Day, where it was the scene of many of his most important victories. Instrumental in the behind the scenes of this project, Tony Kavanagh, our first guest this morning on Talking Horses. Hi, Tony.
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
I'm very well, and I'm sure you're very happy to have seen the project launched yesterday in honour of your great friend Nick Collum.
Well, it was. It was a very moving day for me. Merely was he a very good friend and a major client in the 80s and 90s, godfather to my son Daniel. But to know that John Massaro was there, and what an amazing day John Massaro had as well. And, yes, it was... just one of those things. Nick is a great character, has been a great character. He contributed so much to life and witnessed all of his successes. And very few people, you know, who are only buying one or two yearlings a year, sometimes one a year, had that success that he had. And starting off with Megaria at Caulfield and then going through the two Caulfield Cups, going through winning the Blue Diamond, and very, very significant. And I was very grateful to Melbourne Racing Club for allowing us to do that today or yesterday.
So what was announced yesterday, Tony, was that yourself and John Massaro came up with the idea to create a statue of Nick, who, of course, died suddenly last August, and to introduce the sculptor Linda Klarfeld, who will make this statue that will be erected at Arrowfield Stud in the Hunter Valley.
That's right. When there was a service, a memorial tribute to Nick at Flemington, and John, I was talking to John there, and he was incredibly upset. And still grieving, as we all were. And I said, look, I want to talk to you over the ensuing months, which we did, and we caught up with the Magic Millions. Spoke to Bruce Wilson, who was with Nick when he passed, and he was a very close friend of Nick's as well. And I said, look, this is what we're going to do, and let's work on that. So for me, with my background in racing, art and music, and I'm thinking of myself in a way as an artist as well, I want to tell a story. So we wanted to get the key players, so obviously Nick and then John and Bruce, and I'll get some a selection of other racing people. But then there's obviously the family, and I can tell you the joy that the children are receiving about this whole project is just fantastic. And to witness Nick Collum Jr.'s, he's so excited on behalf of all of his siblings. And then the other thing is I will get a Footscray, Western Bulldogs part, because trying to tell Nick's life and meandering through the various sectors. So we're three quarters of the way through doing a thing. There'll be people can still be involved if they want to financially, but I want to finish off his life with a football component as well. And that's what we'll have people from Western Bulldogs involved. Yeah.
And a bit about the artist too, well, the sculptor, Linda Clarfield. She's a highly regarded Australian artist specialising in figurative sculpture, and her public work includes statues of the pioneering cardiac surgeon Dr Victor Chang, St Mary MacKillop and St John Paul II, cricketers Keith Miller and Bill Woodfull, and AFL footballer Neil Roberts.
Yes, look, she was born in Prague and came out here when she was four. She's recently gone back to Prague to lecture at the main art academy there where she studied. And she's got students there now who want to come to Australia to learn under her. I'm working in collaboration with her. We've already done something in the music world. I'm working in collaboration with her because I want to extend myself in that area. And we're looking at not merely racing projects, but also because of my background as an Australia Day ambassador, and I've always loved regional Victoria. We're looking at projects in Ballarat and further afield, and she's got a sellout audience for a lecture she's giving at the Opera House in a few couple of weeks' time. But she's also became the first female in history to do the Prime Minister's bust. She did Tony Abbott, which is in the Ballarat Gardens, and next month she's doing Malcolm Turnbull. So she's really on the cusp of quite international recognition, and we understand each other's creativity and all that, and I think it's I'm finding it a very exciting project, and there are other, you know, announcements which will be forthcoming, so...
Wonderful, Tony. And being at Caulfield yesterday in the context of this project must have brought back a lot of fond memories of the times with Nick back in the heyday, of course. I mean, he won so many amazing races at Caulfield, two Caulfield Cups with Tristark and Impazira, the Caulfield and Underwood Stakes with Tristark, the Sir Rupert Clark Stakes and Toorak Handicap with Magari. My Brown Jug won the St George Stakes for him and the Blue Diamond Kortzer. And yourself too, you had a bit of major success at Caulfield having won a Blue Diamond with Let's Get Physical.
That's right. I always used to say to Nick, look, anyone can just pick up a yearling catalogue and purchase a Blue Diamond winner. I said, you've got to do a bit more work to be able to breathe and race it as well. We used to have that banter. But yes, we shared that fantastic thing. And look, 50th running of the Blue Diamond is coming up next year. And so I'm sure there'll be a lot of fond memories coming up with that.
He was a great character, Nick, and a friend to so many in the industry, both here in Australia and right throughout the world. His network's building, of course, during his later years spent working in a senior role with the Hong Kong Jockey Club. He's still sorely missed to this day.
He is, and what he did with the with TRIA was the late Monty Milson had appointed him vice chairman of TRIA, and then unfortunately Monty passed away. And Nick then took that on statewide, nationally and internationally, and he crusaded for the owners like there is no tomorrow. And in my lifetime, there's only been two people with either the written or verbal word that would have shaken, say, racing establishment with a vision. One was Mark Reed, who I worked for a couple of years, and the other was Nick, and worked with. And he was courageous. He was a visionary. As you know, he was originally a journalist before he ventured down the entrepreneurial path. And he could really speak his mind, but he did have a great vision, you know. And the other ironic thing is too, yesterday, how satisfying for John Massara with the success, having bred the Guineas winner. He's had the chosen one out of the Flying Sperm there. He's had Flit out of the British Choice there. He's bred the, as I say, Super Seat, done deal. And for me too, I sold the first stallion I sent to New Zealand in the mid-80s was Fiesta Star, trained by the late Jim Maloney. And he stood at Hawke's Bay. And he's the maternal grandsire of Dundee, because his granddaughter Starring was the champion filly in New Zealand. And so, Dundee was standing at Arrowfield. So there was a whole lot of stuff. And Linda was very excited about this this whole project. And she understands how meaningful it's more than just having a project. It's this connection with so many people and history. And this is part, I think, of what I want to do. And also going forward, not merely paying homage to the history of way back, we've also got to, you know, pay homage to the now.
Mm. Tony, congratulations on what you've been able to achieve in getting this project launched yesterday at Caulfield. Can't wait to see the statue in the Hunter.
Good. Thanks very much, Joe.
Tony Kavanagh joining us as our first guest on Talking Horses this morning, announcing yesterday a special project honouring leading owner and owner's advocate, of course, Nick Collum, who we lost last year.
This podcast is brought to you by rsn.net.au.
The results that matter. The Talking Horses racing run through.
A super day of racing at Caulfield yesterday, and we opened the Caulfield Guineas program with the listed debutante stakes over 1,000 metres. It was won by Tanker, a two-year-old colt by Pride of Dubai, out of a tail of the cat mare Cal Catter. Tanker is related to a winner, Lady Naturalist, and was sold for $170,000 at the 2019 Magic Millions Gold Coast yearling sales. The listed weekend Hustler handicap over 1,400 metres was won by Rocks the Castle, a five-year-old gelding by Castledale out of a Rock of Gibraltar mare, Run Roxy Run. The Group 3 Thoroughbred Club Stakes over 1,200 metres was won by California Zimble from the Snowden team. She's a daughter of I Am Invincible out of an Anabar mare, Zimaretto, and is related to winners Cruden Bay, From Within, Lozada and Zaletto. California Zimble was sold at the 2018 Inglis Australian Easter Yearling Sales for $450,000. The Group 3 Beef Stakes over 1,200 metres, won by Tefani. Very impressive, this four-year-old mare by Ocean Park, out of a Galileo mare, Baggy Green. She went through the 2017 New Zealand Bloodstock Select Yearling Sale. The Group 2 Herbert Power Stakes over 2,400 metres was won by The Chosen One, a four-year-old entire by Savabeel, out of a Flying Spur mare, The Glitzy One. The Chosen One was entered at the 2017 New Zealand Bloodstock Premier Yearling Sales, but didn't make his reserve. The Group 1 1,000 Guineas for the fillies over 1,600 metres, won impressively by Flit for Godolphin. A three-year-old filly by Medaglia D'Oro out of a Redoute's Choice mare, Glissade. Flit is related to winners Flow and Speedway. The Group 1 Ladbroke Stakes over 2,000 metres, won by Cape of Good Hope for the Hayes team. He's a four-year-old horse by Galileo out of a Danehill mare, Vega. Cape of Good Hope is related to winners Highland Reel and Vel D'Amoro. The Group 1 Caulfield Guineas, won impressively by Super Seth, a three-year-old colt by Dun Deal out of a Redoute's Choice mare, Salutations. Arrowfield stud with its stamp all over yesterday's winner. Super Seth was sold out of Book 2 at the 2018 Inglis Australian Easter Yearling Sales for $280,000. The Group 1 Toorak handicap over the mile, and it brought up a second Group 1 winner for Sydney trainer Matthew Smith, Fierce Impact, a six-year-old horse by Deep Impact out of a Smarty Jones mare, Ki Gerbera. The Group 2 Scalacci Stakes over 1,100 metres. The winner was Trekking, another important winner for Godolphin yesterday. Trekking now confirmed as a starter in next Saturday's Everest. Trekking is a five-year-old gelding by Street Cry out of a Redoute's Choice mare, Outdoor. And to some results from stakes racing in Sydney yesterday at Randwick. The Group 2 Stan Fox Stakes over 1,500 metres was won by Collada for Gerald Ryan, a three-year-old gelding by Brazen Bow out of a Volpony mare, clearly Foxy. Collada was sold at the 2018 Magic Millions Gold Coast yearling sales. The Group 2 Roman Consul Stakes over 1,200 metres, won impressively by Cosmic Force, capping off a big day for Snowden Racing. Cosmic Force is a magnificent-looking colt by Deep Field out of a commands mare, Little Zeta. He's related to winners Charlia, Jacqueline, Miss Lawrence, My Greek Boy, and One More Zeta. Cosmic Force was purchased for $180,000 at the 2018 edition of the Inglis Classic yearling sale. The Group 3 Angst Stakes over a mile for mares, won by Natoya, a six-year-old mare by Sebring out of a Dahir mare, Cleanup. Natoya is related to winners Furbish, Pedicel, and Swimmer. The Group 1 Spring Champion Stakes over 2,000 metres, and Mark Newnham has earned his way into the Victoria Derby field with Shadow Hero, a three-year-old gelding by Piero. What a run of success that stallion's having at the moment. Shadow Hero is out of a Casino Prince mare, Suki, and is related to a winner, Picaro. Shadow Hero was sold at the 2018 Inglis Classic yearling sale for $260,000. And the Silver Eagle, over 1,300 metres, was won by The Inevitable for Scott Brunton. He's a four-year-old gelding by Done Deal out of a King's High mare, Gift Bouquet, and he's related to a stack of winners, Blarnik, Explosive Gift, Gift from Henry, Monfee, Only Roses, Petman, Single Command, and Tory's Gift. The Inevitable was a bargain buy at the 2017 Magic Millions Adelaide yearling sales, costing just $90,000.
The Talking Horses, winner of the week.
350 metres to go. It's Pounce held together from Rock of Kryptonite. Euphoric Summer, three deep. Bella Nipotina needs a run. Tanker launching down the centre of the track. They've got to Pounce. Euphoric Summer moves up with Tanker at the 150. Tanker lays in, takes Euphoric Summer and Pounce. And Tanker is coming away for Ben Allen. And Tanker won the debutante. 2.5 Euphoric Summer. Third Queen of Rocks from Bella Nipotina, who was green as grass. Then Pounce back behind them. Latin Affair. Rock of Kryptonite got tired second last, and Eurus was at the end.
Early in the new breeding season, Pride of Dubai has certainly made an exciting start to his stud career with two winners, including a stakes winner. Tanker, yesterday on debut at Caulfield, was impressive, winning the Inglis debutante stakes over 1,000 metres. Living up to his looks, he came from well back in the field to make it what was a one-act affair. Pride of Dubai had another runner in the race, Bella Nipotina, who finished fourth after not having a lot of room in the straight. Kieran Maher has confirmed that a race like the Golden Slipper and also the Blue Diamond could be on the table for Tanker. Tanker was consigned by his breeder Ian Smith's Edinburgh Park Stud to the 2019 Magic Millions Gold Coast yearling sales and was purchased by Kieran Maher Bloodstock for $170,000. He's the third foal and second stakes winner out of the listed SAJC Duquetville stakes winner Calcutta, following last season's listed SAJC Cinderella Stakes Lady Naturalist. Purchased by Edinburgh Park Stud for $150,000 at the 2014 Magic Millions National Broodmare sale, Calcutta had a Zoo Star colt on September 7 after missing to not a single doubt last year. Coolmore Studs Group 1 ATC Sires Produce Stakes and Group 1 MRC Blue Diamond Stakes Hero Pride of Dubai has certainly made a wonderful start to his stud career. After the Lisa Latter trained filly, Platinum Dubai won first time out in New Zealand as well.
Now on Talking Horses, Insider Insights.
Seamus Mills was in the thick of the action on Caulfield Guineas Day, and he joins us this week for Insider Insights. How are you, Seamus?
Very good, Joe. Yourself?
Good. It was an important day for you yesterday. You had a fair role to play.
I did have a little bit of interest there. Bred a couple of the runner in the guineas and the runner in the 1,000 guineas, but no joy, unfortunately. Anyway, it was nice to have some involvement.
Superb racing, wasn't it, and great atmosphere?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, fantastic racing, and I guess this is these are the days that we wait for all through football season. And fantastic atmosphere out there, great weather, and some really good racing, which I'm sure will be an important day to look back on in future days as well.
It was important to see a race day like Caulfield Guineas Day yesterday get off to the flyer that it did, especially in the wake of the rather unsavoury headlines that we've all had to face into this week involving Darren Weir. I mean, it's just not been good for racing whatsoever. It's placed the image of the sport, particularly in the eyes of the non-converted, in not such a great light. But yesterday sort of flew in the face of that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, you know, I think the sport faces some challenges. I am 100% convinced that the vast majority of participants absolutely love their animals. And, you know, I think yesterday and the industry as a whole we need to showcase that.
How do we do this, Seamus, in your view?
Look, in my view, there's a few different avenues. I do think that the public need to be aware of the number of horses that are rehomed, re-educated, which are the vast majority. I think as simple as sort of bringing the country to town, so to speak. I think at every race meeting, they should bring in a lot of these horses. You know, there's lots of people who'd be more than happy, I'm sure, to bring in their polo ponies and their show horses and their hacks. And I just think that people should see it. The race goers should see it. You know, where these horses are and what they're doing in their life after racing.
It's a frightening fact, isn't it? Those charges that were read out concerning Darren Weir, I don't even want to repeat them, and that's not avoiding the reality of this, but they really are horrific, the charges and what they imply about how trainers can potentially treat their animals.
Look, I 100% couldn't agree more, and I think that this will continue to play out during the spring carnival. I do think that, obviously, you know, they're trying to sell newspapers, that these things create headlines, grab headlines, and I'm sure that there'll be more headlines as the spring goes on, perhaps as any videos and other evidence comes out. So I'm sure this is you know, certainly not the end of it, and whilst I feel that there should be zero tolerance on these things. As I said before, I do think that 99% of participants absolutely adore their animals, and I think that shouldn't be lost in all of this. And I think the industry, you know, certainly should do more to make the general public aware of it.
Interestingly, there's been a lot of conversation around the timing of the announcement of these charges. In my view, there's never a good time to announce this, spring carnival or not.
Yeah, look, there's certainly no good time to announce it and so on. And obviously this is the time of year, I suppose, that the newspapers give to racing. And so therefore, you know, I personally think that there may be an element at work who don't particularly enjoy or like racing. I do think it's interesting timing that every year, you know, whether it was Cobalt or whether it was Aquanita and so on, these things do seem to bob up right after the grand finals, and they do seem to take they take up the headlines just after the grand finals. But in saying that, they're reporting news, they're reporting facts, so I think the industry needs to do more to change there's certainly a reality in that these things wouldn't be reported if they didn't happen. But as I said, you know, I'd keep repeating myself, but I do think that being right in the thick of things, that the majority of horses are looked after, the majority of horses are loved, vast majority. And that's what we need to make the general public aware of as well as these headlines.
Do you think, like I do, that racing could tell its own story better than it does currently?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, I think the reality is, whether it's cycling, athletics, there are bad news stories that need to be managed and controlled, and perhaps more so put into perspective. And I do think that whether it's a Racing Australia issue, Racing New South Wales, Racing Victoria, they could certainly do more to combat What I do think is, in a lot of cases, myths and misinformation.
Could journalists in particular and the media in general better drill down into the horsemanship side of racehorse training and the sport of racing in general? Very much the central thing and theme is often the punt and first past the post, but there are some amazing people involved in the industry. The majority of people are wonderful horsemen and women who have a deep and genuine love for the horse, but that isn't maybe showcased well enough at the moment.
Yeah, look, I think so. I think, it is a sport, and for me, a lot of the participants in the sport don't punt, have no interest or already have enough money invested and so on in the ownership and breeding and in the animals themselves. So, look, I do think that the sport is a lot more than just betting. There's betting on football, there's betting on all sports these days, which is huge, and people see those as sports. But I do think that perhaps whilst they are the lifeblood of the industry, I think that that it could be showcased that there is a sport here, not just an opportunity to have a bet.
To be frank, too, a lot of our listeners this morning who would be breeders and owners, they're gambling in their own way, aren't they, as far as their investment in the industry?
Absolutely. Look, the vast majority of my clients spend more every week and have more on the line, I guess, financially than the vast majority of punters. But as I say, they are extremely important part of the industry, but as I said, there is a sport there that I know a lot of people love and would be involved in regardless of the financials.
Yeah. Well, interestingly and thankfully, it didn't scare people from attending Caulfield Guineas Day yesterday, and we saw spring racing in Melbourne in full swing despite those awful headlines this week. Moving on to some more positive discussion now, Seamus, and Pride of Dubai, a stallion going places, had an important winner.
Yeah, the Coolmore will be very happy with how their two new boys kicked off. Vancouver having two stakes place juveniles in Sydney last week, and then and Pride of Dubai having a stakes winner yesterday. So both the two new stallions getting on the board early is very important.
Pride of Dubai's winner, a horse called Tanker, winning at Caulfield.
Yeah, bred by Ian Smith, very good breeder. From New South Wales, a little bit out of the sort of normal, I suppose, or the mainstream breeding area, but been very, very good over a number of years and bred this horse and, yeah, in his colours. So he's a very astute guy and come up with Pride of Dubai's first winner.
Last week on the show, Seamus, we talked about Enable's attempt at winning a third arc, and you did predict that it might not go her way, and such was the case.
Yeah, I didn't get the winner right. Sotsass running a nice third, but not managing to win. But yeah, look, I think John Gosden probably spelled it out right. The soft ground perhaps got hold of her, but from a parochial point of view, I think that just goes to show what an amazing animal Winx was in being able to turn up. You don't always get conditions to suit, races run to suit, and that ability to string wins together is a very difficult thing to do no matter where you are in the world. And Abel coming up just short, but as I said, for me, it was just a little punctuation mark perhaps on Winx's career.
That's a good point you make about Winx, as parochial as you say it is, but she was an incredible horse. And interestingly, during the week, her breeder, John Camilleri, had a bit of money to throw around at the international sales.
Yeah, look, he obviously sold one for outstanding, 1.8, 1.6. And it was, the interesting thing for me from a bloodstock point of view has just been how good a sales, Northern Hemisphere sales season these Australian mares have had. We didn't get to see what Atlantic Jewel foal would have made. These mares have had an unbelievable season in Northern Hemisphere with Australian mares both at Keeneland and now in England, really making a name for themselves.
And yesterday's Caulfield Guineas winner, Seamus, Super Seth, were you impressed by his performance? An important win for Dundeal, the Arrowfield stallion.
he had a good day, didn't he? Also with the Silver Eagle. So he's had an exceptional day, done deal. And Arrowfield were pretty happy with themselves. You would expect perhaps with the ownership that Super Seth may even end up at Arrowfield. So great day for them.
Okay, any other points you'd like to make before we close off for the week? We could talk for hours, but anything else of note that happened through the week or even yesterday that you'd like to touch on, Seamus?
No, look, I'm just looking forward to next week. I've got to say, when these weeks roll around, just can't, you know, one day's over and you're already looking forward to Monday and the nominations for the following week. So, can't wait for Caulfield Cup Day. Hopefully another big crowd and some more positive news, hopefully, during the week.
Absolutely. That's Seamus Mills joining us with his insider insights for this week on Talking Horses. Some good news coming out of Cambridge Stud in New Zealand this week, and they are delighted to be involved in the purchase of the exciting UK sprinter Hello Umzane. Henry Plumtree from Cambridge joining us on the show this morning. Hi, Henry.
Morning, Joe.
Nice to be touching base with you amidst some better news. Of course, last time we spoke to you, we talked about the ill-fated Roaring Lion and the tragedy there, but some better news this week for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the picture with us is that we, you know, you have to absorb something of the magnitude of Roaring Lion, and you can either sort of sit in the corner and, you know, think how unfair everything is, or you can actually get up and get going again and try and find something to replace him. We're not going to be able to replace him, Joe, because he had a pretty special pedigree, pretty interesting pedigree, and he was obviously a very special horse. But, you know, we weren't exactly looking this year. We were definitely planning to get another horse for next year. But this horse was put on our radar by our racing manager, Jason Smith, when he won the Haydock Group 1, Haydock Park Sprint. And within a week of him putting the horse in front of us, Nico de Chambeau rang from Etraham and said, would we be interested in being a partner in a buyout of the horse because the owner wanted to sell? And we put a value on him, and we basically said, well, this is what we think the horse is worth, and we were told what they wanted, and it was pretty much a match, so we went ahead with it. I think the principal reason that we did it this year was that the horse is a seven-start horse. Hopefully he's got a whole year in front of him next year. And the exciting thing for us is that he is a Group 1 winner, and he won a group race as a two-year-old, but he's got next season ahead of him where he can take place in those signature sprints in England and hopefully enhance his value.
Mm. Yes, it was officially announced that he will race on next year, as you'd expect, and that will be with his current trainer, Kevin Ryan, Henry?
Yeah. We spoke to Kevin Ryan. I spoke to Kevin Ryan about 10 days ago and had a really good chat to him about the horse. I mean, obviously, he's a massive fan, and he was delighted to be able to keep the horse in training. And, you know, it's pretty exciting for him as well. He said that the horse is still quite mentally backward. I don't know whether you saw the Commonwealth Cup at Ascot, but he was in the barriers quite a long time, and he played up a bit in the barriers and subsequently missed the start by a couple of lengths. Those sort of things, Kevin obviously wanted to get ironed out, and he said he will be, when he's mentally mature, he said he'll be you know, serious horse next year. So he's pretty excited about it.
Yeah, considering the barrier mishap there, he was still a game third in that race, and he, of course, also recently won the Haydock Sprint Cup at Group 1 over 1,200 metres, and has shown to the audiences there in racing that he's a very good horse, capable of possibly doing better things. So that next racing year for him, as you say, is going to be absolutely paramount in building perception around him and subsequent value.
Yeah, it will be. I mean, it's really underpinning his value. I mean, if we have a stud value in mind, if he, hopefully it won't happen, but if he broke down tomorrow, we could stand him at 15 grand here, which is pretty good for a Group 1 winner out of there. But hopefully he's going to enhance his value and run on for us next year. And those races are, in UK terms, those races like the July Cup and the Diamond Jubilee, they are stallion-making races. Mm. So, no, it's very exciting to be part of the Etraham group again. We've got SF Bloodstock from New York in there with Gavin Murphy as well, who are all partners with us in Almanzor. So it's really nice to be able to repeat the process.
And his pedigree, Henry, is of course very relevant and influential in this part of the world.
Well, it doesn't get much better than Dane Hill, Invincible Spirit, and Shamadal, really. His mother's by Shamadal. Kodiak's a half-brother to Invincible Spirit. Started life as a stallion, I think, at about €5,000, and he currently stands at €65,000. So he's obviously a pretty serious stallion, Joe. I think it's very relevant, particularly with our biggest customer, which is Australia. You know, I think it's very relevant for us to be having a horse in New Zealand where we can provide an alternative to the Hunter Valley in terms of getting people interested in a horse that's got just as good a pedigree, and hopefully he's going to have an outstanding race record when he retires.
And also, as he continues to race on, Henry, he will carry alternately the colours of Cambridge and also Etraham?
He's going to carry Etraham's colours next week in the champion sprint at Ascot, and then it'll basically be turn and turn about, so we will get the next one. And if he runs at Royal Ascot next year, it'll be in the Cambridge stud colours. And that's how we're going to work it. Etraham have their own colours, and as they're going to be the major partner in the horse, Brendan was quite happy for them to have the first crack at him.
Mm. And how are things then in general back at Cambridge after what's been a challenging couple of months? So well into the breeding season now, it's really onwards and upwards, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, the season's gone amazingly well. It's been very wet in New Zealand. As poor people in New South Wales, we feel for them because it never stops raining here. But it's warming up. It's a beautiful day today. We've got 180 foals on the ground. Stallions are going really well. Our racing string is starting to wake up a bit. I mean, we had a near miss with Probabil in Sydney. We would have loved to sort of get up in the flight stakes, but it wasn't to be. But I think we feel that we're starting to be competitive on that racing landscape in Australia. We've got some lovely fillies over there at the moment, probably 15 to 20 with 15 to 20 different trainers, which is quite a challenge in itself. But it's all going well. No, we're really looking forward to next year and getting that Massara report adopted, Joe. That's going to be the key thing for us next year.
Yeah, is that all gathering the momentum it requires to be executed?
I think so. I mean, it's a painfully slow process, and for those who've been clinging to the cliff top by a fingertip for the last 10 years, it's agonising for them. But because it's a government process, Joe, it's not going to be quick, and everything has to be scrutinised, you know, in a country which is extraordinarily over-regulated at government level. They have to look at everything, but I know that the people on the RITA committee, which is headed up with Peter Weller and a couple of other industry heavyweights, they are very confident that by the time they put a new board in place next July, that legislation will be in place and the returns to racing will start to flow, as they did in New South Wales.
Mm. And just on another note, Henry, I'd be interested in your opinion on the rather terrible headlines that permeated through the media here in Australia this week, centred around the Darren Weir charges and the impact that's having on the perception of racing, particularly for the younger generations. I mean, it's a huge concern and, in my opinion, something the industry has to very openly face into and manage the messaging around racing going forward, because this potentially is going to have a detrimental impact on the long-term health of the industry in this part of the world, there's no doubt.
Well, I think it's probably animal welfare is going to be a buzz, you know, the key word for the next 10 years, Joe, and probably longer than that. I mean, I think for us to maintain relevance, particularly, as you say, in that younger demographic, it has to be the first cab off the rank in terms of what we address in the next 5 years. I mean, I think in Australia, the Greyhound debacle, whenever that was 5 or 6 years ago, highlighted the fact that there were processes and practices going on within that industry that were completely unacceptable to people. And, you know, racing horses is no different. I mean, there's a whole lot of question marks around all sorts of practices in horse racing. And, you know, I think in respect of Darren, I think I wouldn't be saying anything about that until the court case is heard. And I don't think it would be fair to pass comment on that. But as a general observation, we absolutely need to be addressing issues of welfare within the racing industry so that we have an answer when people do point the finger and say, what happened there, or what are you doing about this? We have answers for them, and they've got to be viable answers. You know, John Massara's welfare plan from cradle to grave is absolutely something that should be adopted everywhere in the Southern Hemisphere, no doubt.
Yeah, and no doubt it's a big part of the Cambridge strategy, welfare. As you say, it must be the top priority for the industry in general, but people operating small and large-scale businesses in the horse space.
You've got to be able to operate your space, whether it's a stud or a racing stable, on the basis that if an inspector or a member of the public walked into that yard, you would have absolutely no worries about welfare. You wouldn't have a moment's concern about it. It's not good enough to know when the inspector's coming in to tidy things up and make sure that that's not happening and this isn't happening. It's not good enough. Nowadays, we have to be absolutely on our game the whole time. And I think there is a general acknowledgement amongst the management of studs and racing stables and trainers. There is absolutely a general acknowledgement that that's got to happen.
Yeah. Henry, thanks for joining us on the program this morning and in particular sharing your views on that very important issue for the industry.
No problem, Joe. Always a pleasure.
Henry Plumtree, a special guest with us this morning on Talking Horses. Cambridge Stud announcing this week that they've purchased a share in the exciting UK sprinter Hello Yume Zayn, which will eventually, when he retires, stand at Cambridge.
RSN 927's Talking Horses with Joe McKinnon.
A horse that really captured everybody's attention yesterday was in Sydney, winning the Silver Eagle. The Tasmanian galloper, The Inevitable, trained by the leading trainer in Tassie, Scott Brunton, who joins us this morning. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Congratulations on the win yesterday in the Silver Eagle, The Inevitable. What a great little, and I emphasise, little horse he is for you.
Yeah, he's fantastic. He's just like a breath of fresh air. We're very excited to have him, and he's just great for the stable.
There was plenty of discussion on the coverage yesterday about his size, firstly. How many hands high is he, actually?
Look, I reckon he's just touching 15 hands, if we're lucky. When I measured him last year, he wasn't quite 15 hands. I'd like to hope he's grown a little bit. He weighs 438 kilos.
That's a very small thoroughbred.
Yeah, very small, very little.
But he's got a heart bigger than himself.
Yeah, he's very brave, very tough. himself and my partner, they do a good job together. They fit well. Yeah.
And you've hogged his mane. Can you explain why that is?
Tegan hogged his mane. He had a shocking mane, bits and pieces missing everywhere. And so she figured it was best to come off. I like to hog their manes anyway, so.
Well, it completes his very unique appearance, doesn't it? There was a great photo posted yesterday of the horse standing in the tie-ups and the horse neighbouring him was towering over him.
Yeah, big Shan, a big air Shanaki. He's quite a big horse. That's his travel mate. So, yeah, the big fella with the little fella, they seem to match good.
On pedigree, he's got a bit going for him. He's by Done Deal, a top stallion, of course, who sired the Caulfield Guineas winner yesterday. He's related to a stack of very handy winners, and you managed to pay just $90,000 for him. I guess his size alone might have had something to do with that bargain price tag.
Look, I think so. And being such a late foal in the family, she'd had quite a few foals the mare. But look, it was a great buy. Dad picked him, selected him at the sales, and look, the rest is history. It's been fantastic, just an incredible ride. Yeah.
He might be small, but is he a sound horse?
Yeah, very sound. Good on his feet, very correct. Yeah, touch wood, everything's okay there.
So it's onwards now in Sydney. What's the plan?
Look, we'll go to the Golden Eagle. We're about to head to the stable shortly to see how he's pulled up. But at this stage, yeah, that's where we'll be heading, the Golden Eagle. He'll stay here at Waratah Thoroughbreds at Bowral or Moss Vale, we'll go from there.
And 8 wins from now 10 starts, almost $700,000 in prize money. He's establishing a fierce record.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be nice to try and add to it in 3 weeks with the $7.5 million on offer in the Golden Eagle. But he's done an incredible job, the horse.
Yeah, he certainly has. Game as they come, the inevitable. And I would say he's developing a bit of a cult following already in Australian racing, Scott.
Yeah, let's hope so. He's worth following if you knew the horse. He's quite a character. So he keeps you well entertained.
All right. Well, enjoy your visit to the stables with him this morning. Thanks for joining us.
Beautiful day, drivers. Thanks for having me on, Joe.
That was Scott Brunton joining us to discuss the inevitable. Yesterday's Silver Eagle winner now headed to the Golden Eagle and a share potentially in millions of dollars worth of prize money. Speaking of big races, we're counting down to Melbourne Cup Week at headquarters, Flemington. Lee Jordan from the VRC joining us this morning on the show. How are you, Lee?
Good, Joe. How are you?
Very well, thanks. And so pleased to see the announcement that the club made this week in relation to the grooms during Cup Week. And those that are working with horses in Group 1 races will have their names listed in the race book.
Yeah, Joe, I think the grooms are obviously people that obviously do a lot of the work and don't get a lot of the praise. And we sort of thought at the VRC that in the Group 1 races we'll name all the grooms that look after the horses. But on top of that, we'll also, for every race over the carnival, the winners of each race will receive a antler bag. And also inside the antler bag, they'll have a picture of the winning photo as well. So we just really want to recognise the grooms for all the work they do. And they're sort of the unforgotten, unsung heroes, I suppose, of the racing game that do a lot of work. And we just really want to recognise them.
Mm. And especially at the moment with a topic of discussion being the issues around welfare and people involved with horses, this is a very positive message to put out there about the horsemanship and the passion required to present these horses on race days.
Yeah, so I agree, and I think that's why we want to recognise them, and I agree entirely with what you're saying, and I think it's a positive initiative, and I think there'll be more to come.
Shaping up in general towards Cup Week, it's only weeks away now. You would have been pleased to see such a successful race day yesterday at Caulfield. Spring is in full swing in Melbourne.
Exactly. I think there's plenty of horses that will probably come on from yesterday that will be aiming at Flemington Carnival. We've got some great bonuses too. Probably good to mention that horses that ran in the Caulfield Guineas and also the 1,000 Guineas are eligible to compete for a $1 million bonus in the Carbine Club Stakes, which is a three-year-old mile race on Derby Day. Also, the Toorak Handicap, the place getters in there, can compete for a $500,000 bonus in the Kennedy Cantala, which is a $2 million race on Derby Day. So plenty of form lines leading into the Flemington Carnival, so looking forward to it.
And what's happening on the international front, Lee?
Joe, I haven't been down to Werribee, but there's obviously another shipment that arrived overnight. I think about 16 odd horses, and we obviously saw Cape of Good Hope win for David Hayes yesterday, which is a big result. But and Prince of Arran ran very well as well in the Herbert Power. So I'm not sure there's plenty of action happening with the internationals.
Yeah, what's your horse to follow for the carnival at Flemington, in particular for the Cup?
I'm very interested in a horse called Mer de Glass. It's a Japanese horse. He needs to run in the top eight in the Caulfield Cup to get a start in the Melbourne Cup, which I'm sure he will. But he's run his last five on end. So just the Japanese, obviously, you can never dismiss, and just interested to see him next week.
Okay, so we'll note that horse's name down. I know you're a very good judge of form, Lee, and these internationals in particular.
Nothing. Thanks, Joe. But looking forward to a great week at Flemington, and obviously, plenty of action and plenty of things for the members and also customers coming along.
I can't help but ask you this, and please don't feel obliged to comment. You may want to keep your mouth closed, but the suggestion by Peter Volandis and all this New South Wales versus Victoria carry-on that's been ensuing over the past couple of months, but personally, it's never going to happen. We know that. B, what a ridiculous suggestion about moving the Cup. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, well, obviously the Cup's still staying on the first Tuesday in November, and as I said before, we're looking forward to a great week, and I think you just said it all then, Joe.
That's all right. I'll put my neck on the line. Oh, dear. Well, in a funny sort of a way, it gets the conversation going, doesn't it, around racing, good or bad?
Yeah, you're right. But, the Cup's staying where it's staying, and... let's bring on the carnival. Looking forward to it. It should be a great week.
Yeah, and may the Cup remain on the first Tuesday of November for certainly as long as we live and beyond. That's Lee Jordan joining us from the VRC this morning. A great announcement this week that the grooms will be recognised in the racebook in the Group 1s during Cup Week at Flemington. And that's all we've got time for on this week's edition of Talking Horses. Hope you enjoyed the program and you're enjoying spring. Look forward to your company again next Sunday following Caulfield Cup Day and the Everest. Bye for now.